Hi, good morning, everyone. Absolute pleasure for us to host Biocon Biologics, one of the largest integrated biosimilars company globally. I really like your motto, I think, transforming healthcare outcomes globally. So pleasure for us to host Shreehas Tambe, who's the CEO of the company, and look forward to your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Varun. Thank you to the J.P. Morgan team for the opportunity. Let me just walk you through what Biocon Biologics is in a bit. We'll start, of course, with the title of the presentation that I have for you today. I know that when we talk about biosimilars, mostly we talk about cost arbitrage. I think one of the key things that I want to talk to you today about is, why do we need biosimilars? How is it going to help us bring in more equitable access to healthcare? And why is it that we really need innovation to do that? Let me start first with the safe harbor statement. Now that we've got that out of the way, a quick look at what Biocon Group has done over the years. So if you look at what we've done as a company, we've been in business for a little over 47 years. And what's really driven us over the entire period that we've been here, for a large part of it, we were an enzymes business. Before we got into the pharmaceuticals part of it in the late 90s. And the four businesses that Biocon Group has incubated, we've got the small molecule business, which is in the Biocon Limited part of it, which is listed in 2004. The Syngene services business was something that was a growth driver we identified back in the late 90s again, and that was something which is listed as a billion-dollar organization in 2014-15. It's one of the top CDMOs in the country, serving some of the big pharma. We've got Bicara, which was our novel's growth driver, and it was listed on Nasdaq last year. Was a very successful listing. And that brings us to Biocon Biologics, which was where we've housed the insulins business, the recombinant proteins, the monoclonal antibodies. All of that is within Biocon Biologics. But if you look at what the ethos of the company has been, is it's very highly innovation-driven. So if you look at the number of patents that we've created along the way and those which have been granted, we have a very strong portfolio of IP. The landscape that we've created is very strong. We are amongst the top 15 or 20 companies that we serve in our Syngene Research Services business, giving an indication that it's not just cost arbitrage, but it's the innovation focus that we are really about. With the acquisition that we did with the Viatris business, we are now present in a very large part of the world. We are present in over 120 countries, and our market cap, which is for the listed company, is over $5 billion. The Biocon Biologics business is still unlisted, and we'll talk about it as we go forward. But before I talk about the company, I just want to set the stage in terms of where this challenge is and what is it that we can do about it. For a very large part of last few years, at least from 2020, we talked about communicable diseases, and a large part of the healthcare spends were focused around how are we going to manage some of these pandemics, that the main pandemic that came through, which is the COVID-19 pandemic. But if you look at that chart, which is in front of you on the left-hand side, you will see that it's really the non-communicable diseases, which is the global disease burden that we are dealing with. The healthcare systems are actually working with a high burden of cost for the three towers that you see in the middle section on the graphic, which focuses on metabolic, oncology, and immunology portions. So these are the three disease areas which require the most attention, because that's where most of the global healthcare spends have gone. It's not about any specific country. And if you see some of those indications that are written here, which says the incidence of oncology is expected to rise significantly over what it has been in the last 5 or 10 years. It's the same with diabetes, where you expect 1 in 8 adults to be diagnosed of being diabetic over the next 20 odd years. If you look at immunology, you're expecting 1 in 5 in the industrial world to have some kind of an immunology challenge to be dealing with. These are massive challenges ahead of us, and these are something that the healthcare systems across the world are dealing with. So what are we doing about it? Healthcare treatments, paradigms have always been focused on seeing the best standard of care that can be made available, and small molecules have been doing it for a very large period of time. But over the last few decades, we are seeing that treatment paradigm has shifted, and over 40% of those treatments are now moved towards biologics. So of the 15 top-selling drugs globally, 8 of them are already biologics. So it tells you that's already moved because the standard of care has shifted. And that's also because it has a better profile in terms of how they perform and an outcome that is really more beneficial to the overall healthcare system. From an opportunity standpoint, if you just look at the opportunity, there are, over the next 10 years, almost 50 of such blockbuster assets. And we know when you talk about a blockbuster asset, these are assets which have sales of over $1 billion annually. There are close to 50 such assets which are in these therapy areas that are going to lose exclusivity. So there's a massive opportunity in that disease burden that we are trying to address. So there is a challenge, there's a solution, and there's an opportunity because there are several such biologics that are losing exclusivity. So what is the solution to that? Each of these assets, as they lose exclusivity, you will find them as an opportunity for biosimilars. The question really was, and I remember 10 years back when we used to talk about whether the biosimilars will be accepted, whether there will be an adoption of biosimilars in some of the major markets of the world. I think that question has been answered very well, and there is a very good adoption we've seen across the board, whether it is in Europe or whether it is in the United States. We are seeing a very strong adoption of biosimilars. So those are here to stay. So if I look at that graphic on the chart here in front of you on that slide, if I go back 5 or 6 years, the opportunity was much smaller. You were looking at an opportunity size of $6 or $7 billion. That's expected to significantly grow, which we already last year it was at $18 billion, and you're looking at a threefold increase for just the biosimilars opportunity in the next 4 or 5 years, which is a significant uptick from what it was just 4 or 5 years back. So what I'm trying to say is that the opportunity ahead of us is far more exciting than the opportunity that was behind us. But what does it take to win in this opportunity that we talk about? Because it's a very exciting opportunity. There are several players. There have been some successes, some challenges. We've seen some players succeed and some not do so well. What we believe is that to be successful in this space as a biosimilars player, you need a comprehensive portfolio. You need a very strong portfolio of products. To do that, you're going to need innovation capabilities, a very strong R&D base, which you will have to invest over a period of time. Success can't be done overnight. This is something you'll have to invest over a period of time. And there are several companies which have done this well, but you need to couple this with manufacturing capability, because if you can't couple the development with manufacturing, then you're going to have a challenge. You'll need to set up global manufacturing capability and a very strong distribution network, because supply chain vulnerability is something we've seen over the course of the pandemic. I think one of the things that the pandemic taught us is the robustness of supply chains. I don't remember supply chains being ever a conversation in boardrooms. But today, supply chain is a topic discussed in almost every boardroom, every conference, because it's so important and you're only as strong as the weakest link in your chain. And it's very, very important to do that. And the final piece which we generally miss is a strong commercial engine, because unless you build a strong connect with the patient, the prescribers, the healthcare givers. It's very difficult to build a sustainable business, very difficult to build a sustainable relationship. We believe this is the recipe for success, and I want to walk you through what is it that Biocon Biologics has done over the course of the last few years so that we can have a shot at being successful in this endeavor. We probably took one of the boldest steps that has been taken in this industry, where we were partnered with Viatris for a large period of time, where we were a minority partner, a one-third share of it, and Viatris had a two-third share in the relationship. It was a very, very successful relationship. We continue to be very successful together, but we decided that there was one company which needed to lead this. And Biocon Biologics made a very large acquisition, over $3 billion, and that's an acquisition that transformed us from being a company which was more science and development, or science and operations in that sense, to being a fully integrated player, which is what we believe is needed to be successful in this highly competitive biosimilar space. If you look at what we've achieved as a part of this, is not only were we not present in so many countries, but it was important for us to integrate that so that we ran the business in our own hands. Typically, this kind of integration or post-acquisition takes anywhere between 2 to 3 years. I think I'm very proud of our team, where we've been able to successfully integrate that business along with the advisors that we had in the course of our journey in a record time of about a year. And that has really helped, because it has built confidence with the customers, it has built confidence with the patients, and it has given the team a lot of confidence in how to proceed forward. As a consequence of this, Biocon Biologics today is one of the top 5 biosimilar players in the world. I talked about the three levers that we really need, and I'll talk about 2 others later to underpin them. The portfolio part of it is very important, and if you do not have a strong, comprehensive portfolio, you're going to be there for a short while, and the customers are going to lose confidence in you as a sustainable supplier. And I think you've seen this before. We've publicly talked about this. We've got 10 products approved, some of them commercial, some of them which will get commercial shortly. I'll talk to you about that. We've got some product in late stage which we've disclosed, and there are a number of products that we've not disclosed yet until they get to the right stage of development. So we have a portfolio of over 20 products that we are developing. We have a very successful track record. And I think when I talk about track record, this slide is very important. We have a track record where we have a history of being ahead of the curve, where we've had several firsts to our record. We were the first to do several of these approvals, including the one with our own proprietary P-Cap Asterisk platform for our insulins portfolio. We're the only biosimilars player today which has its own insulins portfolio which is approved in ICH countries. And I think that's a very unique distinction, because we believe the next big pandemic, which is not talked about, is the diabetes pandemic. And I think that's an area where we believe that we are committed to making sure that we make a difference and make that product accessible to diabetics around the world. We've got a series of oncology products that we were the first to bring to the United States and to other parts of the world, trastuzumab being one, pegfilgrastim being the other one. I think there are several other regulatory challenges that we dealt with as we work closely with the agency. Interchangeability was another challenge in the United States, and I think we worked very closely with the US FDA, where we got the first interchangeable biosimilar, per se, to have been approved by the US FDA, to the point that the commissioner at that time said that this was a momentous occasion for the FDA, that a biosimilar had been approved as an interchangeable. So we've really believed in working on these innovative products, and very proud of what we've done as an innovation-driven company. I talk next about manufacturing and the capabilities that are required to be successful. We invested over $1 billion in our portfolio. We've invested close to $1 billion in our manufacturing capabilities. We've got scale that not just meets what is required for a particular country, but we've always built scale to global demand. And what you see here is we've got global agencies approving our facilities. Some of our facilities have also been awarded the Facility of the Year by ISPE. We've also got a fully integrated capability on drug substance, drug product, devices. And what is more important is we've got capabilities across multiple technology platforms in terms of how we've developed products, how we've manufactured them, and most importantly, how we are going to be able to commercialize them. When I say that you build capability in terms of manufacturing capacity to global scale, this is just a snapshot to give you as a reported capacity map that is done by the BioPlan Associates just a couple of years back. And it tells you that we are amongst the top 15 in terms of our global installed capacity. So that gives you a sense of what kind of capacities that we've built and why we believe we'll be sustainably successful. That brings me to the third piece, which is the commercialization capability. This was very important, is what we realized when we did that acquisition from the Viatris part of it. And today, I'm very proud to say that we are present in several advanced markets. And one of the important validations of how the customer views the integration or the confidence that they have having acquired the business is in the market share. And what I'm very happy to see is that across key geographies, post our integration of the business, market shares for all commercial products has grown significantly. So they've grown from about 10-12% to over 20%. But in certain emerging markets, we practically are responsible. In fact, it's more than a sale. You actually have a moral obligation in some of these countries to be responsible because it's not a short supply for a particular number, you're now morally responsible to work closely with the administration. And that's the kind of responsibility we undertake as a company and as a socially responsible organization as well. Moving on to what is very important before I conclude the underpinnings of what is required to succeed is the financial performance. Now, obviously, post the acquisition, the numbers have grown on the top line. But what I want to draw your attention to is that it's not just growth in the top line. That would have been called as revenue growth. What is important, what I want to point out here, is that it's profitably grown. An EBITDA percentage of 25%, even as we've acquired a new business and continued to grow it. And that's something that we're very focused on, because unless you have a profitable business, it's hard to continue investing in it. I talked about the investments we made in the manufacturing facilities. I talked about the R&D investments before. We also have a very niche set of private equity investors who've invested in us much before we got to the acquisition as well. And you see some of the names on this, on that part. Most recently, just towards the end of last calendar year, we also did a US dollar denominated bond to the extent of $800 million, and it's listed on the Singapore Stock Exchange. It's trading very well. It had received a lot of interest from investors. Again, you can see that there has been a lot of focus in terms of how we can get the moratorium to see that we focus on the business. So the debt part of it is addressed. The interest is now to see how we can run the business for growth. But underpinning all of this, we talked a lot, is really a strong governance structure that is required before you can move forward. And we're very committed to this. The visionary behind the Biocon Group, the iconic Kiran Mazumdar Shaw, she's the one who's really built this organization. It's been her vision. And the leadership team that you see on the other side. So a strong board, which has helped us bring a strong corporate governance structure even before we've gone public. And it's been in place for the last 5-6 years since inception. And a very strong, global, diverse capable, experienced management team, some of them that you see here on the table with me. The idea being that you want to really represent a global organization, and that is what underpins the success that we've had so far. It brings me to the last slide, saying, what is it that we are excited about? The year ahead is very, very exciting for Biocon Biologics, because we're looking at 5 new launches just to bring those products in this country, in the United States. And we are looking at 3 products globally. We're looking to strengthen our footprint across Europe. We've got several products approved in Europe and a presence in all the key geographies, EU5, as you say, in the EU. We are committed to diabetes. I've said that before, and we're looking to double our capacity in our insulin's facility in Malaysia. We've just done that. The FDA has approved our facility recently as well, if you'd have noted. And we're looking to increase our depth and breadth of our products and presence in emerging markets. I think this is really a very exciting year, and we are looking forward to see how we can unlock value that we've created in the business that we've built over the years. Thank you very much for your patience, and my team and me would look forward to your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shreyas, for the presentation. One of the success factors you mentioned is having a strong commercial engine. And we understand that, you know, having a strong formulary coverage plays a very important role in how you monetize your products. You have products, you probably have approvals, but, you know, how do you monetize that? And we've seen in marketplace that has played out very differently than what earlier, you know, one would have expected. And each product has had a very different experience in terms of, you know, having that formulary coverage. So how do you solve for that?
And I'll request Matt to jump in to respond to this as well. But let me just give you a sense. I think the important part is to view the U.S. market in 2 buckets very clearly. One is the pharmacy benefit space, and the other is the medical benefit space. I think we would probably agree that the medical benefit space has performed, you know, as per expectation, and some of the prices that we have seen there have endured for a very, very long time. We've launched products in 2018, and we continue to see a very robust performance on them. The pharmacy benefit space operates slightly differently, and we've probably seen a slightly different expectation than what we had from some of the more recent launches. But I'll let Matt talk to you about that to see if you can add more color, Matt.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Shreyas. So as Shreyas was saying, between Part D and Part B, your first approach to this is the payer side. And what payers are looking for is consistency. They're looking for that vertical integration. They're looking for that supply. And the last thing they're looking for is staying power and innovation, meaning what is the size of your portfolio? Because everybody knows there's a slight decline in this, but the overall, as you're introducing more products to this, you see an uplift as a company. The other thing you have to understand, it's not just the payer side on both of these. You have to have a robust commercial sales force as well, and you have to understand the nuances between Medicare, commercial, as well as specialty pharmacy. And Biocon has all that from the acquisition and also what we built after the acquisition to be very sustainable. And lastly, I'll say is that it is about scale. Scale, not only be able to do the volumes and the capacity that Shreyas showed you within the slides on our ability to manufacture, but also that robust portfolio that a lot of you I saw snapping those pictures of our portfolio. That's the important piece in the success, not only today, but also the staying power of tomorrow.
Thank you.
I think there are a couple of questions.
We have 30 seconds
okay.
left.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Maybe one.
Yep, super. Sorry, who's in?
Yeah, so wonderful presentation, CS, and great journey by Biocon. So congratulations. Eric, I think what you are mentioning about Part B and Part D products. So I have a question like, for a pharmacy benefit type of product, what is the future you are seeing?
for pharmacy benefit.
Yeah, in terms of penetration, in terms of pricing.
Yeah. Look, I see it very optimistically because of the portfolio that we have, as well as how it operates in Part D. You see it launch, and then it has stability within the pricing standpoint. We are also seeing favorability within the payers of embracing biosimilars, and then how the originators decide they're going to stay or play, that's to be to come. But we're very much in and have the same ability to compete in all these different portfolios with our products.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I think we know that there's a lot of interest, but we've run out of time. Thank you so much.